Today, I get to share one of my favorite passages. An old geezer who had farmed all of his life became bored and decided to open his own medical clinic. And he put a sign out front that said, "Get your treatment, $500. If not cured, get back $1,000. Well, Dr. Young, who was 50 years younger than Dr. Old Geezer, thought, well, he doesn't know beans about medicine. This is a good chance for me to get $1,000. So he went to the clinic. He got in the office and he said to Dr. Geezer, "I've lost all the taste in my mouth. Can you help?" And Dr. Geezer said, "Nurse, bring the medicine from box 22 and put 3 drops in Dr. Young's mouth." So she did, and Dr. Young was like, "That's gasoline." And Dr. Geezer said, "Congratulations, you got your taste back. That'll be $500. Well, a couple days later, he comes back in again, Dr. Young does. He figured a way to get his money back. Came into the clinic and said, "I've lost my memory. I can't remember anything. Can you help?" Dr. Geezer said, "Nurse, get the medicine from box 22 and put 3 drops in Dr. Young's mouth." And Dr. Young said, "Oh, no, you don't. That's gasoline." And Dr. Geezer said, "Congratulations, you got your memory back. That'll be $500. Well, 2 weeks later, after trying to concoct a way to get all of his money back, he came into the clinic and he said, "I've lost my eyesight. So bad, it's so bad, I can't see anything." And Dr. Geezer says, "Well, I don't have anything for that." He said, "Here's your $1,000. Dr. Young takes the money and says, "Hey, wait a minute, this is only $500. Won't y'all wait for me, okay?" And Dr. Geezer says, "Congratulations, you got your eyesight back. That'll be $500. Moral of the story, just because you're young doesn't mean you can outsmart an old geezer. I'll never forget the birthday party we had for Myrtle Wallace. She turned 100. We rented out the community building in Aurora, and I met her son. He showed up for the party, and somebody asked him how old he was, and he said, "I'm 81, to which his mom, Myrtle, said, and I quote, "They sure grow up fast, don't they?" My oldest daughter keeps saying something to me that I don't like, and if she doesn't stop saying it, I'm not going to open my wallet to her or the kids anymore. I'll say something, and she'll say, "Dad, you're talking like an old man." Or I'll do something with my phone, like swipe it 3 times when you're only supposed to swipe it once. And she'll say, "Dad, you're doing that like an old man." Well, as a preacher of the gospel, I've always loved Paul's letter to the Philippians, especially the first chapter. But honestly, he's starting to talk like an old man. And it's interesting what he has to say. He knows it's better for the people and the church if he stays here. If I'm the preacher for years to come, that's better for my church. But it's better for me if I just go on ahead. To live as Christ, to die as gain. You all need me here, so I'll stay if that's the way the Lord wants it. But I'd rather go. He's talking like an old man. It's a great passage. It's kind of lengthy, but I didn't know what to leave out. Because once I started reading and studying and writing, I had to use the entire section. So I'll read fast, but listen to the old apostle writing from a prison cell these words. "I want you to know, brothers and sisters, that what has happened to me has actually served to advance the gospel. As a result, it's become clear throughout the whole palace guard and to everyone else, I'm in chains for Christ. And because of my chains, most of the brothers and sisters have become confident in the Lord and dare all the more to proclaim the gospel without fear. It's true. Some preach Christ out of envy and rivalry, but others out of goodwill. The latter do so out of love, knowing that I'm put here for the defense of the gospel. The former preach Christ out of selfish ambition, not sincerely, supposing that they can stir up trouble for me while I'm in chains." And here's the key part of the passage. "But what does it matter?" What does it matter? "The important thing is that in every way, whether from false motives or true, Christ is preached. And because of this, I rejoice. Yes, and I will continue to rejoice, for I know that through your prayers and God's provision of the Spirit of Jesus Christ, what has happened to me will turn out for my deliverance. I eagerly expect and hope that I will in no way be ashamed, but will be have sufficient courage, so that now as always, Christ will be exalted in my body, whether by life or by death. For to me, to live is Christ, to die is gain. If I'm going on living in the body, that'll mean fruitful labor for me. Yet what shall I choose? I do not know. I'm torn between the two. I desire to depart." He's ready to go. "I desire to depart and be with Christ, which is better by far. But it's more necessary for you that I remain in the body. Convinced of this, I know that I will remain and I will continue with all of you for your progress and joy in the faith, so that through my being with you again, your boasting in Christ Jesus will abound on account of me. This is a great passage. Now, let me put a couple verses together. Verse 13 and verse 22. As a result, he wrote, it's become clear throughout the whole palace guard and to everyone else, I'm in chains for Christ. Verse 22. If I'm to go on living in the body, this will mean fruitful labor for me, yet what shall I choose? I do not know. Let me talk to you this morning about choosing your chains, about that. And I can learn from this old preacher, I sure can. And here's the first thought. Even though he was a victim, he chose to be confident. Now, I'll give a prize out to anybody in here this morning who can tell me, don't put the next slide up yet, Terry, anybody who can tell me which four books Paul wrote from jail. I'm so confident, I'll give you $100. Don't be Googling right now. That's what I thought. He wrote four letters from jail. Anybody? Well, I'm reading from one of them, so surely you can get that, and I'll give you a quarter. What's one of them? Philippians, that's one of them. Huh? Ephesians, that's two of them. Anybody else? We're not going to play high-low. Colossians is another one. Philippians, Ephesians, Colossians, and the little book of Philemon. All written from a jail cell in Rome. Now, it's a paradox to begin with that he could write the happiest book in the Bible, Philippians, while he's in a prison. I mean, he's writing about the progress of the gospel while he himself is on lockdown. That'll preach. Sometimes when you're in your worst situation, that's when God does the most through you. Have you ever had God take the steering wheel from you and it wasn't Carrie Underwood, but it was God? I mean, you just had no control. And when you read this, it doesn't sound like a guy who's licking his wounds to me. I love Paul. He's sitting here chained to a Roman soldier, and he takes this approach. You think I'm chained to the soldier? Well, you got that wrong. The soldier's chained to me. Captive audience. And he used that moment to further the gospel. How could a person think like that? Why has this happened to me? Or how has this resulted in some benefit for God? Now, you don't get this kind of thinking when you're in your teens. You don't. And you don't get it when you're in your 20s or your 30s or your 40s. But Paul is older now. He's talking like an old man. They beat him. He's been shipwrecked. He's been snake bit. He's been whipped more than once. He got stoned at a rock concert. Not what you think. They called him a fake. They called him a fraud. They threw him in prison. And in prison at midnight, he began to sing, and when he began to sing, all the chains fell off because he teaches us this. You can let your chains break your praise, or you can let your praise break your chains, right? He was confident, even though he was a victim. Secondly, even though others let him down, he chose to be joyful. Tell me if I'm on the right track here, because I'm 57 now, as of a few days ago, and my outlook... How do I want to say this? What people think about me or say about me, what I wear, what I do, how I look, what I say, becomes less and less important the older you get. Is that true? Somebody who's really old tell me, Roger, is that true? It just seems like the older you get, the less... other opinions matter to you because you've lived it, you've been there, you've seen it, you know what's important, you prioritize a little better. If I could say it like my Uncle Walter, but it needs a little editing, I'd say Paul couldn't give a rat's cheese what people think about him or have to say about him. Is it true that when you're older, you care less about the opinion of others? Most people can be put into two categories. Let me see where you're at. I could not believe the early service crowd. Actually, in hindsight, I should have thought that. You are either a risk taker in general or you are a play it safer person in general. There were only four of us out of 100 in the early service who raised our hands as risk takers. So let me ask in this service. Now, you got to pick one or the other. You're either a risk taker or a play it safer. Who's a risk taker in general? Keep them up. I want to see if I had some of you pegged right. Okay? Who's play it safers? outnumbered again. Fifth grade, I was dared by Brian Tinker. Brian Tinker was from Fairview, Indiana. Means nothing to you, I'm sure. He dared me to jump my dirt bike off his homemade ramp over six garbage cans. And it's when Evel Knievel was doing his thing, and of course, all it took was a dare. Shoot, I'd have done it without the dare. The dare was just icing on top. And I made the jump. Yes, sir, I did, but I landed, my back tire blew out, and I took out an entire row of mailboxes. That was the sixth concussion I had suffered at that point in my life, and I was only 11 years old. So my mom and dad could count, every 2 years, this boy's going to have a concussion. Third grade, Wyatt Self dared me to eat everyone's green beans at lunch, which is fine by me. I love green beans. So I did all 14 containers of Jolly the Green Giant goodness at one time. It's one of my favorite memories. By the time I got on the bus at the end of school, guess what happened? I spilled the beans. Now, the older I get, physically speaking, I'm finding myself falling into the play it safe category. You know why? Because I'm thinking, I don't have time to go to the emergency room. And I don't want to waste the money that it's going to cost me if this doesn't go the way I want it to go. And I'm seriously, I don't know if I like it or not. I'm just adapting. I'm becoming more and more like the majority of people who want to play it safe. But that's physically speaking. I'm also finding this out about myself. The older I get, spiritually speaking, the more I'm ready to be a risk taker again. When it comes to sharing Jesus with people or the mission of the church, we don't need to play it safe. We need to step up and speak out and do it without apology, not worrying about what other churches in town might say about us, whether we'll be liked or whether someone has something good to say. I love this about Paul. He's like, listen, you've thrown everything at me, including the kitchen sink, and here I am still standing up for the gospel. And the more chains you put me in, the more they're being preached for Christ. The truth is, everything you've done to me has only served to strengthen the message. So bring it on. I like that. He's saying, at this point in my life, I'm not into popularity, I'm into purpose. I'm not into promotions anymore. I'm already there. I'm into purpose. And I love what he wrote. I want bracelets made. Somebody take this idea and run with it for me, okay? I'll help you. You be my go-to person and get these bracelets made. I'll advertise. I want WDIM bracelets. Remember the WWJD bracelets? What was WWJD? What would Jesus do? Anybody know what the WDIM bracelets will be? Huh? What do I mean? No, but good, thank you for trying, Rita. Somebody in the early service said, wolves die in Minnesota. That ain't it. I mean, come on. We already read it in our passage. And I told you, I warned you, I was going to highlight this. What does it matter? What does it matter? What does it matter? The important thing is, in every way, whether from false motives or true, Christ is preached, and because of this I rejoice. Yes, and I will continue to rejoice. I want a bracelet. What does it matter? How much better would your life be, and would you sleep at night, and would stress disappear if you truly made that your motto? If you've got your relationship with the Lord where it ought to be, and you know you're going to heaven someday, then you can look at everything to your right and your left and in front of you and say, what's it matter? What does it matter? I'm getting more emotional the older I get and the more understanding and empathy I have with people who are going through some rough patches. But listen to me. Every now and then someone needs to set me down. This is your invitation. Set me down and say, Mark, I love you, but you need to stop being so stupid and let stupid stuff distract you from what really matters. And I need to set you down and say, listen, I love you, but you need to stop being so petty and letting little things destroy your joy, poison your spirit, and distract you from what should be a priority in your life. Somebody say, what does it matter? What does it matter? How many of you like to bowl? Anybody like to bowl? I do too. Used to? Yeah, that's a used to kind of thing too. You know what I liked better than bowling though was watching people bowl. Because they do dances they would never do if you were dancing. You know what I mean? Some people let go of the ball and they'll, like, they got it to the right. And they'll talk to it. Left. Left. Some of them won't even look. I see them go like this. Everybody contorts their body. Does why? You know who you never see doing this? Professional bowlers. Why is that? Because they learned a long time ago that once I let that bad boy go, I have no more control. What a lesson that is. Letting go. It's not being passive. It's being proactive. Listen, letting go means God can take hold. I love Paul's philosophy. What does it matter? What does it matter? I need to ask this every time I get distracted. What does it matter? Look what I've been through. What does it matter? Look what I'm going through now. What does it matter? If I'm where I need to be with the Lord and I'm going to be in heaven someday, this can be my motto for just about everything else in my life. What does it matter? Wouldn't you love to be able to live that way? I would. He was confident even though he was a victim. He was joyful even though people let him down. Here's a third thought. Even though there was uncertainty, he chose to be hopeful. It's a choice. He chose his chains. It's a choice. Most people, when uncertainty comes into their life, their first reaction is to be negative or filled with anxiety or stress. We've become conditioned to expect the worst. I hate that, but we have. At church, at work, home, we've become conditioned to expect things to not go well. Years ago, before I came here, I was invited to Louisville Bible College to mentor some young would-be preachers. Didn't seem like all that long ago I was the young preacher needing mentored. But here I am now getting a call saying, can we have one of our young would-be preachers shadow you on hospital calls in Louisville? They called me and three or four other preachers, and our job was to take this young student with us hospital calling and let him see, you know, the ins and outs of doing that kind of ministry. So they gave me a young preacher named Jamie. I liked him a lot, and I'm glad I met him. And they sent us to Norton's Children's Hospital in Louisville. And while we were there, we visited some kids with cancer, which I like to do. Once you get past the heartache of seeing them there, most of them are pretty cool. They cut through the what-ifs of life and the what should have been, and they deal with what is. And we met a kid named Bart, 5 years old. I never knew a kid named Bart before. Not a real-life kid named Bart. And this kid's name fit. He was awesome. He was suffering from neuroblastoma. Cancer was in his nerve tissue. And he, most likely, Bart had it when he was born. And he was a cool kid. He loved to draw, paint, all kinds of pictures in his hospital room that he had drawn himself. He'd been there a long time. And while we were visiting with him and talking, Jamie, the Bible college kid, was just kind of sitting back and watching me interact with Bart. And then he stepped up and he asked him a question. He said, are you going to be an artist when you grow up? And I love this kid's answer. He said, and I quote, excuse me, I'm an artist now. That's cool, isn't it? That's the attitude we need. What are you waiting for? One of the great themes of the Bible, life is a gift from God. Seize it, taste it, experience it, savor it, share it. It's too short to stay upset. It goes by too quickly to be bitter all the time. It comes and goes so fast. You don't want to waste it being stressed or discouraged or scared or unhappy. I'm trying to ask myself this more and more with the things that get me off center. And man, I need to preach this to myself more than I do you all. What does it matter? What does it matter? I love this approach Paul takes. Now listen, you have to know by now that God is going to get the last word in regards to your eternity. Surely you're not under the illusion that just because you can fool your family or fool the church or fool your preacher that you can fool God. You cannot. One of my preacher buddies told me last week about four college students who during finals week wanted to blow off some steam, so they took the 4-hour drive to Nashville, went to a concert, partied a little bit too late, fell asleep, and did not make it back the next day for their final. So they made up a story on the way back. They concocted this story to tell their professor that they were driving on the Bluegrass Parkway, they had a flat tire, nobody would stop to help, and that's why they missed the final. No big deal, the professor said, just show up tomorrow and we'll give you the final. Well, they show up the next morning, and to their surprise, the professor divides them up and puts each of the four of them into separate rooms and hands them a test with two questions. First question, worth 5 points, solve this math problem. Second question, worth 95 points, which tire on the car went flat? Nothing has ever escaped the notice of God, not your sin, which should make you quake with holy fear, and not your scars, which should bring you some hopeful faith. This is my buddy, George Stansberry. He's gone on to be with the Lord. Oh, George Stansberry, actually. And Priscilla tells me he preached a revival here years and years ago. I've been blessed to be mentored by some of the greatest preachers ever, and I don't know why they took an interest in me, but they did. And I've got so many stories to tell you about George Stansberry. He stayed in our home often, and he would always rap me. He'd make fun of me. I sang, even as a kid, I sang in a quartet, and I sang tenor. My voice was a lot higher back then, and I could hit the high notes and the ladies' parts. And George Stansberry said, "So you're the tenor, Mark?" And I said, "Yeah, I sing tenor." He said, "All you tenors have this funny habit." So what is it, George? He said, "When you go to hit that really high note at the end of a song, you raise your leg." Sort of like my Heisman pose, right? You raise your, I said, "I don't do that." "Oh, you do." He said, "All tenors do." I said, "I don't do that." "Well, yes, you do." And I caught myself. Next time we sang for the church, we sang the Haven of Rest, and I got a real high note at the end, and I caught myself. I looked down, and my leg was up in the air just like that. And I didn't even know I was doing it. So when he would pick on me about my leg coming up, me and my brothers always picked on George because he had the biggest nostrils of anybody I've ever seen in all my life. I mean, you could park a car in his right nostril. It was big. And his nose hair, you could see it. And if we sat in the right pew at just the right angle, you could see the forest in his nose. And so we razzed him about his nose hair. Well, he checked into a nose hair trimmer, and it was going to cost $200. He was at our house when he was looking at the ad, and we're like, you're going to pay $200 for a nose hair trimmer? He said, "Absolutely not." Well, he found an ad in another magazine for a $7 nose hair trimmer, and he ordered it. He's at our house. We're making fun of his nose hair, and he says, "All right, look what I bought." And he takes it, and it's in a box. I've never seen anything like it before. $7 nose hair trimmer. And he took it out, and it's this little piece of steel with these ragged edges that kind of go different directions, like a lawnmower blade. And you pinch it together, and you're rent. So all of us in the living room, my mom, my dad, me and my brothers, and George Stansberry puts that in his right nostril. And for the first time, gives it a squeeze. I'm here to tell you, it doesn't cut anything, but it grabs anything nearby. And it grabbed onto him, and he shot tears 2.5 feet. And that thing is swinging from his nose as he's moaning. And Mama Rose, she's cool as a cucumber. She walks over to him and says, "Give me that," and rips it out of his nose. And no lie, his leg goes. Before I came to Bedford, they had an event to honor George Stansberry. He was in a wheelchair. He couldn't look up. He was hunched over like this. And it bothered me because I'd never seen him like that. And I spent time with him, and I'm glad I did. And I asked him before he died if he could do anything different or change anything, what would it have been? His answer, tell me this doesn't sound like the Apostle Paul. Preacher George said, "There's a lot of stuff I wouldn't choose, but there's nothing I'd change because now I've been through enough to know it took some of the breaking to get to some of the blessing, and it took conflict to get to the calling, and it took some of the weakness to get to the strength. I wouldn't always choose it," he said, "but I wouldn't change it either." Man, oh man, Paul said in Philippians 1:14, because of my chains, most of the brothers and sisters have become confident in the Lord and dare all the more to proclaim the gospel without fear. When you read what this aging apostle of God wrote, you sense the urgency for him in his service to the Lord. If there was ever a time for you to step up to the plate and to go all in and to get knee deep in your service to the Lord and his church, I'm telling you, it's now. There's a big difference between me being in church and the church being in me. Unfortunately, the relationship many of us have in the church with the Lord is similar to what Wilbur Ries wrote years ago. I'm sad to say this describes many, many people in their church experience. I would like to buy $3 worth of God, please. Not enough to explode my soul or disturb my sleep, but just enough to equal a cup of warm milk or a snooze in the sunshine. I don't want enough of him to make me love a Muslim or pick beets with an immigrant or give a room in my house to someone homeless. I want ecstasy, not transformation. I want the warmth of the womb, not a new birth. I want a pound of the eternal in a paper sack. I'd like to buy $3 worth of God. You ever feel that way? Just enough to keep my guilt level down. That's what I want. Just enough so I don't have to worry about burning in hell someday. My freshman year of Bible college, I met some interesting kids. I had never driven in a town bigger than Madison. I'm driving downtown Cincy. I went the wrong way on one-way roads on a regular basis because I didn't even know there was one-way roads. I hated it. But more than difficult than adjusting to driving in downtown Cincinnati was adjusting to the people in my college. I'm just a farm boy. And I met a kid named Jamie Garrett who was wired different than me. He was wired different than anyone I'd ever met. He changed his hair color every day. This is 40 years ago. Changed his hair color every day. I mean, it's not a sin if you want to do that. Had metal all over his nose and his lips and his ears. And I'm not judgmental, but I thought, man, when he dies, we're not going to bury him. We're going to junk him. And that's fine, but what he really did that kind of got to us, they had a policy for a while that you couldn't wear shorts to class. Well, they changed the policy, and when they changed that we could wear shorts, but they had to be decent, this kid, for whatever reason, several days in a row, wore his shorts backwards. Now, I've seen different hair color, and I've seen people with metal in their face, and I can deal with that. I didn't know what to make of this. And my buddies started to talk about him, and I'm not one to gossip. I said, you know what? Let's just go ask the dude why he's wearing his shorts backwards. So we did. Went down and said, Jamie, why are your shorts on backwards? Well, he looked down, and he looked surprised like he didn't know it. And then he said, and I quote, the Lord turned my life around so fast, even my pants couldn't keep up. I like that. That's what the Lord did for Paul, and that's what he can do for you. If Paul had a tombstone to mark his grave, it's not a stretch to believe we'd read these words. For to me, to live is Christ, and to die is gain. And because of my chains, most of the brothers and sisters have become confident in the Lord. Man, that's the kind of chain gang I want to join. George Stansberry would close many of his sermons with the same poem every time he preached. And without studying it, I had it memorized at one point because I listened to him preach all the time. Here's what he would say. I had walked life's way with an easy tread, followed where pleasures and comforts led, until one day in a quiet place, I met the Master face to face. With station and rank and wealth for my goal, much thought for my body, none for my soul. I'd entered to win in life's long race, then I met the Master face to face. I'd built my castles, built them high, with their domes that pierced the blue of the sky. I'd sworn to rule with an iron mace, and then I met the Master face to face. I met him, I knew him, I blushed to see that his eyes full of sorrow were fixed on me, and I faltered and fell at his feet that day while my castles all melted and vanished away. Melted and vanished, and in their place Nothing else could I see but the Master's face. And I cried aloud, Lord, make me meek to follow the steps of thy wounded feet. My thoughts are now for the souls of men. I've lost my life only to find it again. Ever since that day, in a quiet place, when I met the Master face to face.